Game On 2FM. With Green Firm, a nourishing addition to any sandwich, salad, stir fry, or snack. Natural protein, your way.
Thanks to Jenny Green for soundtracking our afternoon. It's Monday the 26th of July. I'm Damian Lawler, and this is Game On. Coming up today, Sligo's Mona McSherry makes Irish swimming history as we await her Olympic final in the small hours of tomorrow.
It's just amazing. Like, this is my first event ever at the Olympics and I made it into a final. Can't but be happy with that. It's just so great to be here and get to experience this, especially with, you know, the past year and a half that everyone has had. But it's just great. I love it.
Best of luck, Mona. Darren O'Sullivan is with us also to talk provincial honours in Gaelic football. Plus in hurling, Niall Moran on the counties who have progressed in the qualifiers.
What a take from the puck out from Stephen Bennett down the far side. Bennett launching this one from the far sideline. What a score! Believe it, from the far sideline, two Galway men swinging off him, and Stephen Bennett puts it between the uprights and four between them again.
Yeah, Stephen Bennett, class act. Rory Best also joins us to review a huge first test win for the Lions over the Springboks.
Owen Farrell then with the penalty midway between the 22 and the 10 metre line as he takes a step back now and walks up, launches his boot at this one, kicks it towards the post, and that kick from Owen Farrell has gone straight between the posts. The Lions by five with 2 minutes remaining.
You could just see he loved the kick. He almost danced on the spot as he went to pick up the tee after he made contact with it. This would be seismic for the Lions to start the series with a victory.
Seismic indeed. You can text us on 51552 or tweet at GameOn2FM.
Game On 2FM.
But first to Tokyo to get the latest on day three at the Olympic Games, and reporting for us is Damien O'Reilly.
Game On Olympic updates with Circle K, who say Go Team Ireland, we're with you all the way. Circle K, proud partner of the Irish Olympic team.
Magnificent Mona McSherry, the 20-year-old from Grange in County Sligo, is the toast of the Irish team here in Tokyo this evening. She became only the second Irish swimmer after Michelle Smith to make an Olympic final after qualifying for the 100-metre breaststroke with a time which was just 0.3 seconds outside of her Irish senior record.
It's amazing. You know, I was on the cusp of it going in ninth, so I was really just going out there to race, and I'm happy to say that race felt a lot better than the one I did yesterday, so that's exciting. I think I'm just grabbing my bearings at the moment, and you know, it's just amazing. Like, this is my first event ever at the Olympics and I made it into a final. Can't but be happy with that.
You're cool as a breeze. You're only the second Irish person ever to make an Olympic final.
I didn't actually know that, but that's amazing. No, it's just so great to be here and get to experience this, especially with, you know, the past year and a half that everyone has had, but it's just great. I love it.
The time a little bit slower than the heats, but I mean, with these morning finals and semi-final sessions, it's just about the race, isn't it? The time is important.
Exactly. You know, it's all about getting your hands on the wall first, and you know, I did that this morning. I produced a good race, and yeah, it was a little bit slower, but I do feel a lot more confident in the way I swam that race instead of last night. So hopefully I can just pull the best parts of both together and swim a good final tomorrow.
We saw a winner of a final yesterday from lane 8. Do you think it's something that's a free shot, isn't it? Do you think anything's possible in the final?
Yeah, you know, no one's given the medal before they go in, so we all have a chance, all equal chance. So you know, I'm definitely going to go for it. I think it's just great to be in with another chance to compete.
Everyone back home in Sligo, I'm sure they're all up at the early hours in the morning. They'll be going crazy, won't they?
I know, yeah, buzzing, I'd say, everyone back home. But go back to sleep now for a couple hours. I'll see you tomorrow.
And the Olympic experience overall, I mean, you're obviously on cloud nine right now, but how have you been finding the whole thing?
It's just been amazing. You know, I think when you get into the atmosphere, and like, we have such set routines that it kind of just feels like any other competition. But when you sit down for a second, like last night after I did my warm down and cool down and all the things I normally do, it kind of hit me that I was in a semi-final. And that buzz is just unbelievable. You know, you can't get any higher than this, so it's just great.
What's going through your mind, through your stomach when you're standing on the start block?
I'm definitely shaking a little bit. I noticed that when I went down to start, my arm was shaking a little bit. I was like, oh my God, it's exciting. I think I'm just like, my whole body knows that this is a really big experience. And even though my mind maybe hasn't caught up to that yet because I'm so focused on racing, but I definitely deep down know that this is something I'm going to look back on in years and be so proud of myself.
Well, congratulations. A fantastic swim, and more to come from you, no doubt.
Thank you.
But there was was no luck for Ireland's two other swimmers in competition today, with Brendan Hyland and Ellen Walsh both missing out on semi-final spots in their respective disciplines. However, Hyland, who finished third in his heat, was delighted with his performance.
Yeah, like, I'm delighted. As I said, look, I've actually only been quicker once, and it was like 2 years ago. It was that swim that I did that was so good and so close to the time. But look, it's been like obviously COVID hit, and some people excelled. I struggled. I mean, I'll admit that. But look, the support I've gotten at home has been absolutely like unbelievable. I literally thought of it the whole way through the race, and that's the second fastest I've done ever. And like this season was not looking like I think 1:37.9 was the quickest I've been. I'm ecstatic. I literally watched the Olympics 2004, and I remember being like a little kid, and I watched Phelps doing the 200 butterfly, literally 8 years old, and that's just where I started kind of dreaming of this mad sport that like there's no background where I was living, with no family background. And I stumbled across the line, but like 3 weeks ago I was in the crack center, and I thought, geez, this might be my last race for me. And then I got a call, and look, the support has just been unreal, and I have to thank everybody so much. I'm buzzing with that. I'm absolutely buzzing.
Your Olympic journey, you were in, you were out, you were in the relay, you were out again. How does it feel to finally be here to swim in the Olympics?
Yeah, like, it was unbelievable. And like, as I said, like, a lot of times, like, say you go to a big competition, you try and lay off the phone, you don't be post. But I was like, look, right, this is once in a lifetime. 3 weeks ago, I genuinely looked around the crack centre and was like, right, that could be it. Like, do you mean? Like, because I thought, look, I'm 26 and you miss out when you're 22 at Rio. And then if you miss again, it's like, you know what I mean? It gets tough, but look, I was blessed, and look, I'm ecstatic. And as I said, that's the second pass I've ever done. I'm really, really happy. Like, yeah.
On the pitch, there were two Irish teams in action today. In hockey, the women's team were beaten 4-0 by the world champions Netherlands, but it wasn't until the last quarter that the Dutch pulled away, scoring 3 goals in the closing minutes. Here's team coach Sean Dancer.
Going into that last quarter at 1-0 down, we were still certainly in with an opportunity. I mean, the Dutch were certainly playing a bit better than us, which was tough. They had a lot of opportunities, but as you're just talking to Aisha, she had a very good game today.
She really put in a huge shift, didn't she?
Yeah, so I mean, as she alluded to, that's part of her role and her job, but it would have been nice for her to have a little bit less work.
The floodgates did open somewhat in the final quarter because goal difference is very important here.
Yeah, so it is a very key position for us to for every team to do well in. And certainly she did well on most of the penalty corners as well, which is the set plays is something really important.
Ireland's next game is against Germany on Wednesday, and they'll need to win at least one of the remaining 3 matches to qualify for the quarterfinals. Making their debut in the Olympics, it wasn't a good day for the men's rugby sevens team. In the morning, they were beaten 33-14 by South Africa, and that was followed by defeat to the USA 19-17 in the evening. They still have an outside chance of qualification, and their next pool match is against Kenya tomorrow morning, Irish time. In boxing, it wasn't a good day for the Belfast featherweights Michaela Walsh or Brendan Irvine. Walsh was beaten on a unanimous decision by Irna Testa of Italy, and Irvine's Olympic hopes were ended by Carlo Palem of the Philippines on a 4-1 split decision.
What can I do? It's boxing. Stuff happens every day. The better man won on the day. I did think it was a close fight, and I probably could have got it myself, but that's just the way it goes. To be honest with you, two, 3 years ago, I didn't think I'd have been standing here, to be honest with you. I had an absolute nightmare of the 2 years with injuries and trying to just get back to full fitness and full health. And to qualify, nobody expected me to qualify. Like, I was bumping into people on the street and they were saying to me, I thought you gave up boxing. They just didn't know the nightmare it had faced. But I'm proud to be representing my country, but I am obviously devastated.
In the men's triathlon, Russell White from Banbridge finished in 48th place. And there was no luck either for Liam Jegu in the canoe slalom. He missed 2 gates, which killed his hopes of making the final, ending up with a 100-second penalty, which left him with his head in his hands as he crossed the line. Also in the water in sailing, Rio silver medalist Annalise Murphy is finding the going tough, and after two more races in the laser radial class, she is sitting in 32nd place and will compete in races 5 and 6 tomorrow. One of Ireland's final competitors in action on day three was Nat Wynn in badminton, and he got his Olympic campaign off to the perfect start with a 21-16, 21-14, two games to nil win over his Sri Lankan opponent.
Yeah, I'm happy with my performance. I'd just like to thank all the team members, staff, my coaches up there supporting me on. I think that was a good boost. Coming into this match, I'm not going to lie, I was a bit nervous walking out. And then once I heard their support, it was overwhelming, and I didn't want to lose in running, so I wanted to make the Team Ireland support staff and my coach up there proud and something to cheer, so I'm happy with my performance, yeah.
You took a 5-1 lead. Did that settle any of those nerves?
In the second set? Yeah, definitely. I think first set was quite cagey. Again, I wasn't implementing my tactics. So second set I could. I got the first set, so I was a little bit more confident, so I could implement the tactics, so that was the key there, and I was more relaxed in the second set, so I could apply the tactics, which was just to play to his forehand side because it was a little bit weaker.
And you now face a winner take all match in the next match.
I played a number 10 seed, and I'm not gonna lie, he's a tough opponent, but I feel if I can bring the same energy and the same spirit for the next game, I feel I have a small chance, and I'm feeling quite confident in the way I performed there, so bring on Wednesday.
And have you enjoyed the overall Olympic experience to this point?
Yeah, of course. I'm in Japan 2 weeks, like 16 days now. I had a holding camp in Fukuroi, and that was amazing. It was very nice and chilled. I think that was good for me, just to come into the village very calm and chilled. And then when it came to the village, I was more focused and my head screwed on. So I felt preparation was great, and Fukuroi and training camp at home. So now I just want to go on court on Wednesday now. Yeah.
Well done, thank you.
Cheers.
Now, with a typhoon on the way to Tokyo, outdoor events, including the rowing, have been affected. But tomorrow, the highlight will be Mona McSherry swimming for a medal in the 100 metres breaststroke final. That's due to get underway at 3:15 in the morning, and you can watch it live on RTE2 television. In other news, Japan is celebrating the gold medal success of 13-year-old Nishiya Momiji in the skateboarding event. In synchronized diving, British veteran Tom Daly and Marty Lee caused an upset by denying China a clean sweep to win gold in the 10-meter diving event. And in swimming, Australia's Ariane Titmus won gold in the 400-meter freestyle, fending off the star of Rio, Kate Ledecky, of the USA. And that's about it from Tokyo on day three of the Olympic Games.
Game on. Hurling.
Welcome back to Game On. Now, it was a cracking weekend of hurling, with Waterford laying down a serious marker against an up-and-down Galway side and Cork putting clear to the sword in the final moments of their qualifier. So plenty to talk about, and joining us now is former Limerick player Niall Moran. Niall, how are you doing?
Great form, Damien. Good to have you in the seat.
The hot seat.
It'll be hard after you're finished.
The highlight for you, Niall, the weekend, it's a very general question, but what stands out for you?
Sure. Look, it was a magnificent weekend again of hurling. So depending on which county they were from, I'm sure people in Offaly will be claiming it was another super weekend that went under the radar. Similarly, in people in Leash will be breathing a sigh of relief. So I'm sure the lads in the Midlands are very happy. But I suppose looking at the two bigger games, I suppose the Waterford game really for me was a standout game. Galway were a team I personally had huge aspirations for. I thought they'd still be very close to Northern Ireland despite what had happened against Dublin, and Waterford really blitzed them. They were absolutely superb in the first three quarters, so that allied to the fact that Galway were really inept on the day. So that was really the standout performance.
What did Waterford do differently to try and tweak from their first game, Niall, in terms of they absolutely blew Galway away in that first half? So what was different from your eye?
Well, I suppose the obvious thing that stood out to me was the intensity, both on the sideline and both on the pitch. I suppose if you're looking at the body language of Liam Cahill and Mikey Beavens on the line, like, these guys were up for it in every ball. They pucked every ball, and maybe in the last 15 minutes he calmed down. The guys on the pitch, like Waterford, just ran from deep. In terms of his selection, having looked at maybe the Leash game previously, you were saying Waterford are a team that look as if they're in trouble. They're switching guys around. They've So I mean, if guys playing in positions that aren't familiar, you would switch your goalkeeper. Even though looking at the layout of the team, like, so I mean, you have new bodies. Jack Prender went to centre forward. Peter Hogan midfield, and you're saying, Jesus, there's a team that are under wicked pressure, and they just came with an intensity that blew Galway away. And so the idea from Waterford point of view was they're just going to run them into the ground, especially along the flanks. And I just think Galway on the day, they had no answer. Look, again, I'm not privy to what goes on inside the dressing room or what has gone on in the weeks leading up to it, but they looked like a team who were just completely flat. On numerous occasions, they went down, albeit maybe to stop the clock, maybe it was with fatigue. For the first three quarters of that game, they looked like a team who just couldn't get out of there quick enough. And I suppose, look, that's probably going to be hugely frustrating for the Galway management and that group of Galway players, because their league performances were totally alien to how they performed in the last two games.
Interestingly, you mentioned Liam Cahill and Mikey Beavens on the line and their body language. So in the GEA and in sport, you have managers who are very passive on the sideline, the likes of Jim Gavin won't give anything away. Then you have fiery characters, the likes of Liam Cahill. And I wonder, Niall, is there a direct alignment between Cahill being up for that clearly with his body language at the weekend and the players responding? Because they simply outscored their opponents 1-11 to 2 points between that first water break and half time. And they had been previously listless. And maybe it was remarked that Liam Cahill had been previously listless on a particular occasion as well.
Yeah, so look, again, there seems to be the chemistry between himself and the Waterford players. Like, it was obvious to 1-1 last year, and I suppose, look, he had a couple of cuts off in the last couple of weekends, but in fairness to him, I don't think any of them were unjustified, and there was none of them personalised in any shape or form. But, like, you look at aspects of the game, like, you had a Waterford half-back line that scored 5 points in play in the first half. Galway themselves only scored four in the same period. Do you know what I mean? Just small things like that. Like, you had the situation where there are 16 points up going into the final quarter. Even the little incident after half time, following the sending off of Conor Gleeson, you just knew that there's some days when you go up maybe at that level and you just can't be beaten. You won't allow yourself to be beaten. And I think maybe, like, the Waterford players, and they kind of made that decision for themselves. And look, given the amount of players that they're down, It's incredible to think that they turned up such a performance, and probably will need to do so again next week against Tipperary.
Liam Cahill kind of half apologised for having a cut off his players pre-match at the weekend. That probably went down well enough with the squad, I would imagine, Niall. I suppose if a manager is talking about players in public, that trust has to be there for that to happen and be accepted, I would imagine. What do you think?
Yeah, there was a famous man from Tipperary. Liam would have played under him, Babs, and he had the same comments going back maybe to 98, and it didn't get the same return.
Yeah.
There's lots of managers, I suppose, throughout the years, have vented their own frustrations, and maybe it's backfired because they didn't have the trust of the room. But I think in Liam's case, like, it's obvious that, look, he's doing the right things with them. They know that he is right. He was trying to elicit that reaction out of them, and that comes from trust and a kind of an honesty with the players. Again, he didn't make it personal. It wasn't about him. I'd say it was just frustration that they hadn't gotten there. But look, it'd be kind of a naive just say it came from the intensity on the sideline. Like, they got a lot of things right on the pitch. They pushed up, especially on Galway's half back line, who tended to be their kind of dominant feature. They ran from all angles, like the hard running Jack Fagan, and obviously huge influence of Jamie Barron, especially as the game went on. And I think maybe aligning to that again, I just think Galway, they kind of got it slightly wrong. They didn't bring the intensity, and like, you had a situation where the two Coonies were playing as deep running half forwards, and I don't think it might have, even though it's probably in fashion at the moment, I don't think for those two players that's really their natural game. And I think Galway just kind of, they were betwixt and between in terms of what suited their play, and it wasn't until they pushed up, you put Kyle Mannion in, you brought Jason Flynn in, like, it wasn't until they really pushed up at the end that they started to get results. And I think that's, again, would be a huge frustration.
I'm just thinking back to when I started out as a reporter and interviewing your brothers James and Ollie, and then later yourself, and it just seems to me, Niall, for the last 20 years, the question of Galway hurling and where they're at, and I thought maybe it had been addressed in the last few years, but they haven't really pushed on from that All-Ireland win. Do you see change coming in that camp now, about both amongst the players and possibly amongst management as well?
And I suppose there's always talk in the grapevine there of, like, what's Galway as a county, like, they don't call them the tribes people for nothing, like, and it's kind of, do you know what I mean, it's a hard county maybe to break into. I suppose, look, in the kind of the context in which Micheál Donoghue kind of left the job, was kind of clouded. It wasn't in the cleanest circumstances. The Galway County Board in recent years has been privy to the goings on, but you get the sense that their business hasn't been done in the cleanest manner possible. So I suppose really, I'm sure the talk in the grapevine will be now that the Limerick man has to go and this, that and the other, but I don't think that might necessarily be the best way forward. Yes, there may need to be a slight transition of players, in the sense that athletically maybe they just looked at pace, maybe just overran him slightly the last day. But I really think, looking from the outside in, I think what Galway might need now is kind of steady heads, cool heads. Yes, there'll need to be a transition of players of sorts over the next couple of years, and that thing takes time. But like, Shane is a very, very good guy. He's a very cool, calm, measured person. I know there'll be people in Galway that say, well, sure, why wasn't he on fire and brimstone on the line, sure? They'll try and claim, I'm sure he didn't care about Scully, he's a Limerick man, but that's not Shane O'Neill.
That's not his style.
He's cool, he's calculated, he's measured, and I think if he deviated away from that, he'd be cheating them a lot more. So if it was me and I was looking at it, I think the Galway might need just to persist with them. Maybe you change up your maybe elements of your preparation, whatever that means, backroom team, and you look with a view to over the next couple of years, whatever people you bring on board with you, that they might take on the reins. And I think that's probably the best way forward, but I wouldn't be surprised at all if the noise are out in Galway, and I don't necessarily think that would be the right thing for them.
Yeah, that's interesting.
They have a good man.
They have a good man, and he is very measured, as you say. The question then of Joe Canning, Niall, you know, history there at the weekend, 565 points in 71 championship matches. That was Henry Shefflin's record, and Joe got 9 points at the weekend, but eclipsed Henry's scoring. 27 goals, 487 points in 62 championship outings, and it wasn't the result he wanted. So just before we leave this game, you're not a Joe Canning spokesman or anything like that, but what would you do if you're in his position? Is modern hurling suitable to maybe a player like Joe dropping back and maybe going into the quarterback role a bit more?
Yeah, I suppose, look, in the league, they had chanced him at midfield, and it was kind of interesting, like, that they left him maybe isolated at times up front in a sprint. And, like, with respect to any guy, especially with the miles, in fact, like, when you're going into your 30s, I don't think that was really the role for him. Like, maybe that role at 11, where he'd still have had to be marked, like they asked no questions, really, of Shane Bennett at 6 the last day. I know he was left free, and at times there was a second wing back left free. So the first thing I'd say is Joe Canning owes nothing to nobody. In terms of describing his impact in the game, there's no adjectives that could sum up the incredible impact that he has made. And if you ask me, he still has a lot of hurling in him, albeit in a different role, albeit maybe as time moves on, maybe beyond next year or whatever, in an impact sub. But ultimately, when it came down to Galway coming back into the game,
it was him.
The two big plays or two goals, and Joe Canning was central to that. So like, there's still a lot of life left in Joe Canning, and maybe that was the fear for all of it, that maybe Brian Kincannon, Colin Mannion, like, they didn't really take it. Like, Conor Whelan was still full of running and full of Conor Whelan still gave him a lot, but outside of that, like, they still don't have anybody else besides Joe to look for when things go wrong, and so there's still a huge role for Joe there.
The other game, Niall, Cork 3-19 Clare 1-23, a late push from Cork. And speaking of late pushes, any sense for you that Cork are coming at the right time?
Yeah, they're definitely coming with a strong team. I suppose the fear here in our side of the county is, like, you know that Cork are probably, it's a period of going on nearly 20 years now without a senior All Ireland, and they're down. But I think the tap was released a little bit when they won the under 20s against Dublin, and even see them during the week against Tipperary, they're 7 points down. Came back to win by 7. Cork teams haven't been in that recently. And again, on Saturday, we saw us whereby they were well in control, and next team was found themselves a point down, and they came back and they rallied despite a man down for some of the critical part of it. So, yeah, they're coming. Are they coming with a team that will still win this year, though? I still don't think so. But they're starting to get their identity back, and that spells trouble for a lot of the counties, especially in Munster.
Yeah, we'll move on then to their game at the weekend with Dublin. And just in terms of the possession game that they play in Niall, and maybe the elaboration through the lines, have they swifted up on that? Have they refined that maybe since the league and the early stages of the championship, do you feel?
Yeah, look, I suppose Limerick probably, they came undone twice against Limerick in the last league game and championship match. So, yeah, they have refined it, and maybe they're moving a little bit quicker into faster forwards. But I suppose, look, so the big thing for Cork the last day was their character. In terms of their gameplay, like, they are playing the ball through the lines, and they do know that if they can spread it wide, they do have huge speed. Like, Jack Connor was massive the last day, and I suppose the instruction of two subs there, Shane Barrett and Alan Connolly. So they do have a lot of pace, but they still have a lot of questions to ask. Like, Clare will have an awful lot of regrets, Stephen, Limerick on Sunday. Like, Clare, again, hit 18 wides. Do you know what I mean? They'd hit 22 against Waterford, and you know, right up to the final whistle with Tony Kelly's shot, like, Clare could have still snuck that game. So Cork, even though they'll be delighted and relieved to have gotten that monkey off their back, I think they still have a long ways to go. But I think, given the recent history with Galway, like, I think over the course of the championship, they've beaten them 11 times versus Dublin, or against Dublin rather, they've beaten them 11 times versus Dublin too. So I think that element of tradition will favour Cork in that regard too.
Just what now for Clare? Because two schools of thought maybe on this. They had to deal with a lot of outside influences this year, and they motored along just fine and clearly played for their manager. And secondly, bit of frustration maybe, Niall, that they didn't beat Cork, and they would have been up to that in their own minds, and another season passes them by.
Yeah, I think there'll be huge regrets. I think there really will be huge regrets. They had built something massive. Even the way they came back in the final quarter to go a point ahead, like, that spoke volumes of the team. Ultimately, probably a difference in the game, that Cork had the impact off the bench with some of the younger under-20s. Clare didn't, and maybe going into the future next year and maybe the 5-10 years, like, Clare are probably going to pay the price for lack of development at underage.
Yeah.
Even watching them against Limerick in the under-20 game, whatever about passing comments on how they played or whatever else, to see a team go out and not wear the current strip of their county and have a goalkeeper having to go up to the terrace to retrieve a stitter to puck it out when they're chasing the game. Like, in fairness to management and players, you can't blame them for that. I do think that the issues at county board level, like, they are probably coming home to roost a little bit now. But in fairness to Clare, they've spotted that. I know Don Maloney, Gerry O'Connor and others are kind of hitting up a group to get their underage going, but that's going to take time, and maybe there's going to be just a couple of barren years coming for Clare until they get that going. Even again, that 20s team, to look at them physically, their physical development, it was way off that particular Limerick team. But even like the likes of Cork, they're developing far more physically. Kilkenny, Galway, they're all running ahead of them, and Clare has stayed stuck in the mud. So there'll be frustration, and I think as years go by, it'll become more of a source of frustration.
Yeah, that's very interesting. Cork versus Dublin at the weekend, Niall. I saw Dublin play the Leinster final. They were ravaged with COVID incidents that morning, and it didn't help their cause. I still don't know what to make of them. Do you? How do you see this game going?
I suppose the Galway game would probably be put into a different context again, given the ineptness of Galway's performance. I think Cork will win. I think Cork are going to come with a momentum. Again, Cork, do you know what I mean? They tend to more often than not perform in Turles. And I just think Cork have still that little bit more class, and Cork people would always expect to beat Dublin. And I think in the other game, I think that would be really a test, because Tipperary, like, they didn't let themselves down in a Munster final, especially in the first half. So I think really that is going to be such an interesting game, because if Waterford get through, like, they'll have huge momentum, albeit when they go out to play a semi-final, it'll be what could possibly be their fifth game in as many weeks, or their fourth game in as many weeks. So fatigue is going to play a part for whichever teams do get through next weekend and going forward to semi-finals.
Cork and Dublin at Semple Stadium, Thurles at 7 o'clock, and I suppose the other game then, Tipperary and Waterford, Páirc Uí Chaoimh at 1:30 on Saturday also. I mean, there's no simple way of dressing this up. That's an absolute cracker on paper, Niall.
Yeah, it's a cracker on paper, and I suppose it'll be interesting, because I saw Liam Cahill would have been in his bonnet, in the sense that he could have been the same guy that might have been managing that team going forward. So their league fixture was a huge game. It was 2:29 to 3:21. So that is a classic written all over it. And again, for Tipperary, there's people who argue that, well, maybe could this be the last stand for a golden generation of hurlers? So that's going to be a brilliant game. Part of me is wondering why 1:30 is the time for it. I know it's been televised, and obviously we're trying to get it out to the mainstay, but a game at 1:30 in the day, it kind of lacks that championship feel.
Yeah, Ulster football final at 4, and I guess it probably comes down to television slots or whatever, but it's a valid question. It'll mean the players having a late breakfast or early dinner or whatever you want to call it. Just you would know a lot of those Tipperary lads, Niall. Obviously, your family very, very closely associated with Tipperary too, down through the years and back through the decades. But what's your gut feeling like? I mean, I spoke to some of the crop involved after the Munster final, and instantly afterwards, they struggled to put a finger on what happened. Can you bounce back from a second half showing like that in time for another high-octane game just 2 weeks later?
Yeah, I don't think there was massive collateral. Like, I think maybe when you reflect upon it, like, do you know what I mean? Let's say, look, that maybe Nimmer came at an incredible second-half performance and physically we just waned. Now, that would be the doubt that will still be there when you are going with the same kind of crop of players, and I kind of said it all along, that legs are going to be an issue for them. So Waterford will feel if we have them coming down the home stretch with 60 minutes left, do you know what I mean? That we will kind of we'll wear them down a little bit. But as I said, look, for that Tipperary group, they've been through an awful lot. They've won a lot of games, and that belief will still be innate in them. So if you're asking me now to call it a good win, I'd be fairly sure that Cork will win the next day. I do think that Waterford might just struggle in the finish and the Tip might get through by maybe a couple of points. I just think the Tip hurling will still come to the fore. And I said that might be the big performance the Tip had in him for the year.
Interesting. Niall Moran, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you, Damien.
Game on 2FM with Green Farm. Healthy dinners made easy with Green Farm's high protein cooked chicken breast fillets range. Available in selected stores nationwide.
Game on 2FM.
Now, you're welcome back to Game On. Convincing wins for Kerry and Mayo in the provincial football finals yesterday. A tunnel scrap in Croker, unity in Kerry, more uncertainty in Galway. And lots to chat about, former Kerry star Darren O'Sullivan joins us. Darren, just go to the Munster final demolition job first of all. What did your county do to recover from that poor opening?
Hi, Damon. Yeah, I suppose the first 15, 20 minutes I was at it, and it was actually hard to see who was marking who. Kerry were a bit all over the place at the backs. The attack weren't functioning. Decision making was poor. And like that, the water break came at a good time for them. And they just regrouped. They went back to doing things a lot more simple, moving the ball at pace, running off the ball. And once they started doing that, keeping it simple and putting the ball over the ground instead of looking for goals, it just started to click slowly but surely. And to be fair, the Corker level or two below Kerry, and they actually ran out of steam after 20 minutes. They had a good start, but the legs were gone after that, and they just couldn't keep up with Kerry.
I think that's what the Kerry guys were banking on, speaking to them afterwards, Darren. Just in terms of that long ball into Brian Hurley in the full forward line, Kerry cut that out pretty swiftly after the water break too, didn't they?
Yeah, I think it was Breen O'Begley that went in on him. Breen actually, at the start of the game, when things weren't going well, he was the one player, himself and Paulie Clifford, that were standing out. Breen had a couple of great turnovers. He actually went in on Hurley as well after that and kind of nullified him. But it just took Kerry a bit of time now to come to grips with it, which I suppose, look, you have to look for negatives in every performance, and that would have been one of the negatives. I think if you were playing one of the top tier teams, a Dublin or a Mayo or a Tyrone or whoever it is, you would have been in a lot more trouble, I think. So, look, it was good that Kerry were able to regroup and start functioning properly, but they'll have to be more awake going forward, because I think one of the better teams, if they come at them with that intensity, they won't die off after 20 minutes.
Interesting, Darren. Paddy Clifford impressed again, another Man of the Match award. I saw him playing with the Kerry junior team a few years ago. Just how difficult would it have been for him to make that leap up to the senior team and play so well, Darren?
Yeah, look, it's great to see. It just shows when you have patience, because I suppose for the last couple of years for Fossa and for East Kerry, he's been playing really well. Obviously, the younger brother gets all the plaudits, but he's been slowly but surely getting more and more recognition. And I suppose a few down here would have thought that he would have been in there last year. He had to probably bite his tongue a bit and be patient. But he's come in and he's really grabbed the jersey with both hands. And every game he goes out there, he just looks more and more confident, more and more comfortable. And as I mentioned earlier, when Kerry weren't playing well, he was the one player in the forwards that was able to drop the shoulder and actually go past the man, draw a second man and look for the pass, whereas a lot of the other boys were getting caught getting double teamed and treble teamed. But he was the one that was able to carry the can of small, but he had 2 points in the first 15-20 minutes, which were crucial to Kerry. And like, it's more than you know, kicking scores or whatever. His work rate, he's a real team player. But as well as being a pick on a man, I think it was Paul Gainey's goal, he picked up a ball well inside his own half, and he hardly had the ball in his hands, and he had to kick 60 yards right into Sean O'Shea's chest. So he brings a bit of everything to Kerry at the moment, and he, like I've said numerous times down here, he's freed up Sean O'Shea, yeah, because he's coming deep and he's able to be that link man that takes a bit of the pressure off Sean.
Yeah, just looking at the squad yesterday, there seems to be serious unity. I have to laugh because it's only a few months ago that WhatsApp was touring the country about disharmony in the camp there, and we've all come a long way since then.
Yeah, look, I suppose it was a lot of soul searching probably for the Kerry boys after last year getting beaten by Cork in a game which I think the majority of the country would have expected them to win very easily, and like that there wasn't a whole pile to talk about down here, so we needed a bit of gossip, we needed a bit of controversy, there was the WhatsApp story. But you know what, like, I think that was very evident even after the game though, and you know, where I was sitting now at the game, you could actually see the subs talking before and after the game. Look, they're a tight group of players and that'll help them going forward, but when you have rumours and stuff like that going around, sometimes it helps to set the wagon a small bit, but they look like they're a very together unit. Obviously it always looks that way when you're winning well, so there's tougher tests to come, and that'll be a good test for them and see how together they are there when the chips are down.
Yeah, just watching Cork in the past couple of weeks with Keith Ricken and under-20s and the progress they're making, and then the start that Cork made yesterday, it looked encouraging. It was a pretty downward spiral after that. What are your thoughts on that Cork project for Ronan McCarthy, Darren? He got a 2-year extension in December last, so he has another bit to go yet if Sue wants, but how do you see it?
Personally, I think Cork have to start from scratch. From a Kerry point of view, like, it's great with a Munster final, but nobody wants to win a Munster final by 20-odd points. You know, it's just no good for anybody. Cork have had for a long time, had good underage success, but they're not bringing it forward in the senior level. I'm not sure what the reason is. I would know Keith Ricken from a long time ago in my CIT days, and Keith is brilliant. He's a brilliant football man, brilliant with the underage. The talk is up there that he doesn't have much interest in the senior job, whether that's true or not, I don't know. But I think they have to start from scratch. Whatever plan they had in place, or whatever plan this was supposed to be, isn't working. They need a bit of a clear out. They have a lot of the same squad players there for a while that haven't been playing well for Cork, haven't been winning for Cork. And I think you need to bring in a good group of these under-20s and the minors that are winning games and start a new project. It's not going to happen overnight. It'll take 4 or 5 years. But not only Kerry and Munster Championship, the All-Ireland Series, they need a competitive Cork. It's too big a county not to be competing at all and to be getting beatings like that from Kerry. Look, it's no good for anyone. So my personal opinion is that they need to scrap whatever plan they have in place at the moment and restart. Bring in a lot of new young lads who probably don't have maybe a fear or an inferiority complex to Kerry, because as soon as the fight started coming in Kerry the last day, a lot of the Cork boys just they crumbled. They started off very aggressive, very intense, and as soon as Kerry kind of got to grips with the game and started coming at him, Cork just died away very quickly.
And Darren, just briefly before we move on to the other game, would you have sympathy for Ronan McCarthy, because he delivered a big win last year against you guys, 14 out of 16 games up to yesterday he was unbeaten, and probably had no time whatsoever to prepare his team last year, and only marginally better this time around?
Look, you'd always have a bit of sympathy, especially after a game like that, but they had a big win against us last year. They had a great chance to win the Munster Championship, and for whatever reason they didn't perform as well. They should have been able to kick it on against Tipperary, I think. I think they went in, they overlooked Tipperary and they got beaten. So do you know what? There's no point having a big win 1 week and not the next week. And a lot of them games, they're playing teams they should be beating very easily anyway. For me, look, I'm down in Kerry and we'd have a lot of Cork boys around Glenbeigh. It doesn't seem like the happiest camp from what I'm hearing down here from a lot of the Cork public. So, look, you'd feel sorry for any manager that's on the end of a meeting like that, but I don't think it's worked up there for them. I don't think they're any closer. All right, they beat Kerry last year. I don't think they're any closer to winning a Munster Championship. Not in the next couple of years of what I'm seeing.
Sean Meehan deserves praise for his job on David Clifford, Darren.
Yeah, he'll probably be the only one that comes out with a bit of credit. Obviously, it's too early, started really well, but he had a very good game. I was actually, half delighted that it wasn't David's day one since, because, it's a good sign of a fella when it's not going your way, but you keep looking for it, you keep trying to get on it. But a lot of that was down to Sean Meehan. He was stuck to him. He didn't make anything easy for him. He left him have no easy ball. So he's going to come out of it with a lot of credit, and you can be guaranteed that he'll relish the chance to lock arms with David again. But like that, from a Kerry point of view, look, it was great to see Kerry functioning without David as well. It wasn't his day. He kept showing getting on ball, but just wasn't his day and kept the goal. But hopefully now he'll come and he'll be mad for road now in a couple of weeks.
No, not much doubt about that. Connacht football final, Mayo 2-14, Galway 2-8. We spoke there about nobody's quite sure where Cork are at. Could you certainly say the same for Galway?
Yeah, I think Galway or Jekyll and Hyde, you'd have one very good first half performance in the second half, just like a different team. Mayo on the other hand are in a bit of an upward curve, kind of quietly going about their business, and they're getting better and better with every game, and they look really good. But I was very disappointed for Galway, and I had a chat with someone recently about this, and we named out maybe 9 or 10 of the Galway members like going lovely footballers, and that's the problem. I think Galway have lovely footballers, but they don't have the balance right between the lovely footballer and the worker and the tough physical footballer, and that's what they're lacking. When teams get tough, when it became a bit of a grit and a bit of a fight, all my money would be on Mayo any day of the week against Galway, because they have the players who are up for the fight. And Galway just didn't seem to want to know about it when it got to that kind of hustle and bustle and the intensity up. Mayo just took over, and that's definitely a worry if I'm a Galway fan, because there's no point having all these lovely footballers if, when push comes to shove, that you disappear and you crumble.
Yesterday was only Pádraig Joyce's third championship outing as senior manager, so he's trying to get a bit of motion into his project. But a lot of the headlines coming out afterwards, Darren, as you say, the physicality, Shane Walsh, maybe the treatment he got, or the perceived treatment he got, and the tunnel incident at half time as well. I guess really it's not what you want to be talking about after a provincial final.
No, and I suppose that's the bottom with it. A lot of these games, it's the things that we don't want to talk about seem to be the main talking point. I actually didn't see what instigated the tunnel incident, but we're around long enough. There's always something stupid that starts these things. But I said this recently as well with the off the ball stuff. Anybody that's instigating off the ball stuff needs to be out of there. Give them the card, get rid of them, because it's only leading to more trouble. And that's probably what started the brawl at half time as well. Obviously, Shane's going to be targeted. I suppose I've had conversations with people about targeting David Moore or David Clifford for Kerry, and all the better players are getting targeted, but you have to find a way to live with it as well and get on with it. But like that, he was playing well in the first half. He got targeted late in the second half, but we didn't see a whole pile of him at all in the second half. So like that, it worked well for Mayo. They got him out of the game, but Galway are going to have to find a way of using Shane Walsh in a different way. Get him out. If it's not going his way, get him to be the lead man. Get him on ball. For me, himself and Combe are two of the better names in GA. They just weren't in the game the second half, and that's what cost Galway.
Yeah, that's a worry. Mayo were quietly rolling along then nicely. People, I won't speak for everybody, but a lot of people just assumed once Killian O'Connor was out of the equation with an unfortunate injury that, it could be a busted flush this year. Not quite as simple as that, Darren.
No, definitely not. And look, I'd admit I probably thought the same myself, but like that, the likes of Connor I know, and I don't know who in the corners, like that with every game, they're getting better, they're getting more confident, they're very direct, they have a lot of legs around them. They still have the same style of play now, but they've added a lot of freshness into the team. They're a lot livelier than they have been over the last couple of years. They have a lot of pace. And for me, the main thing was at halftime, they were way more direct.
Right.
They started using Aidan O'Shea with longer ball. And for me, it's not about Aidan O'Shea kicking 3 or 4 or 5 points or getting a goal. Use Aidan O'Shea and work off him, and you'll go a long way. Because if they can learn to use Aidan O'Shea and the other players around them and understand the role, they'll beat most teams, because they can't see anyone containing Aidan O'Shea if he's getting the right ball. And they were more direct in the second half. Kevin McLaughlin came on, was all over the place. Conroy was constantly taking his man on, his pace, his knife for goal. Should have had another goal, which was, for me, it was wrongly ruled out. and the confidence was up. And, you know, for a team that had such a poor first half, they showed great character to turn around. But having said that, Galway should have been more up at halftime.
How do you see so the season going from here for Mayo, Darren? Like, they've been here before so many times, serial featurees in Connacht final level. So used to Croke Park, they know nearly every trick in the game. Just the best team potentially the Gaelic football has ever seen, maybe apart from the old Kerry teams, have kept them off the crown. So you mentioned freshness and youth. What do they do different in the next few weeks just to make sure they don't have the same ultimate outcome as previous years?
You know, I don't think there's a whole pile they have to do differently. They're going about their business. We haven't heard a whole pile about them up to now. For me, they're going to be extremely dangerous. Look, you'd have to imagine Dublin are going to win the Leinster Championship. I think quite they haven't played great up to now, but you're just going to have to imagine they're going to win it. I have a sneaky feeling for a Mayo win the semi-final. I think Mayo would rather play Dublin in the semi-final than a final. And like that, the younger players coming in, like Rambo, with a bit of freshness, they look like they're buzzing at the moment. They look like they feel they're onto something. Even see the reaction after the final whistle. They've won a lot of Connacht titles, a lot of these boys, but you could see the emotion there. They look like they feel like they're on the right track. The two boys at the heart of the defence, O'Hara and Mullins, they're playing very well. They're two hardy boys. They're up and down the field. They're fit. They're physical. I think they're in a very good place. I think they're just going to keep doing what they're doing. I don't think they have to change anything. Okay. I don't think they have to overthink it. Just keep doing what they're doing. And like that, Dermot O'Connor was back last day. Another big addition. So these fellas are coming back and they're coming into a team that's winning. So for me, they've come in under the radar and it's all positive from a Mayo point of view.
Okay, Darren O'Sullivan, thanks so much for that. We'll talk soon again.
Cheers, Damien.
Time for a break now, folks. After that, it's Rugby with Rory Best.
Game on 2FM with Green Firm. Naturally good food packed with protein. Game on 2FM.
Yeah, you're welcome back. It was first blood to the Lions with an impressive 22-17 win over the Springboks last Saturday, with Warren Gatland reserving special praise for Jack Conan and suggesting the Springboks are now incredibly desperate ahead of the second test. Rory Best joins us now to look back at that game and give us an insight. Rory, Gatland is full of quirks at the best of time, but is he poking the bear justifiably ahead of the second test with those comments?
I think it's sort of eats their own in those. I think if you're in that situation, you'd probably just leave it alone. But I do think he's right. I think they're massively under pressure. I think and you're in a three test series and you lose the first one, it automatically, you know, this is it. It's, you have to win this one, especially when you're the home team. It puts so much pressure on you. And look, it'll get a performance from South Africa that, you know, these are the world champions. They will rise to the pressure of it. But at the same time, I think especially when you looked at that second half, you kind of went, you could see the Lions could only get better. You know, they were just from that first half performance and they really grew into the game. And I left sort of watching the game with a feeling that the Lions maybe had another gear or two and that maybe South Africa had sort of had run their course at this stage.
Yeah, I was going to ask you that. Has Gatland and Gregor Townsend figured out, do you think, Rory, how to break down that South African defence?
I think they haven't played. I didn't think they played enough rugby to properly break them down. But what they did was they nullified South Africa at their game. You know, they were physical with them. The set piece went well. The kicking game, they won that aerial battle. And while I do think that to properly beat South Africa, you've got to be able to take them wide. You've got to be brave. You've got to have good ball players in there. And they're narrow in defence, but they come up so hard that they spook you and stop you taking those wide options. But I think with the physicality the Lions showed, it sort of was that aspect of the game was largely irrelevant, because I think when you look at South Africa and you look at them, okay, in the World Cup final, they probably played more rugby than they did in most of the rest of the tournament. But especially, say, that the semi-final against Wales, you know, they really just went, it's an arm wrest and we're going to win. And they just, the Lions just had too much power for them.
Who impressed you most, Rory?
I think the pack in general. I thought Tadhg Furlong, after that first scrum was exceptional. Both the second rows, and credit to Alan Jones for, you know, whatever it was, 24, 26 days from a shoulder dislocation. Mara Toje, especially in the first half, had a couple of really, really big moments, big turnovers when they were on the back foot. And that's when you need your big players, your big leaders to stand up and do something. I thought the whole back row was very good. Obviously, Courtney Law's got a lot of plaudits, but I thought the other two stuck to their game really well. I thought Jack Conan sort of showed the type of rugby player he is. You know, when you get him, when you get Jack fit and you get him playing games, he is an incredible talent, and it was great to see him produce that on such a big stage.
Springboks pride is dented now. Country's in a bit of trouble as well. The team usually responds, and when that is the case, you were on tour, two Lions tours yourself, Rory. So psychologically, where does the balance lie between the Lions being absolutely buoyant this week and South Africa being stung so badly?
I think the Lions, the beauty of this sort of stuff is that you ride this wave of emotion, this wave of energy. You know, they'll have gone and they look forward to going to meetings. There'll be a lot of learning and a lot of things that they can do better. You know, it wasn't particularly a really, really impressive Lions performance, but it was very, they stuck to their task, and it was a very workmanlike performance, and as the game went on, they got better and better. And so they've got to ride that wave and allow them to go in with a bit of confidence and probably really focus on the first 10 minutes, because if they can get a big start and they can carry on the performance that they finish the game with to start the next, you know, that's big for them. South Africa, by contrast, they're going to have to find something. They're going to look to see how can they get the like of Chesney Colby on the ball more. How can they get him more involved rather than just kick chases? How can they get their maul, their scrum? The scrum looked like it was going to be a weapon in the first one, and then really didn't fire a shot after that. So they'll look to go, and they'll also look. They'll look at a few of the really tight calls that went against them, and they'll think that. I think there was, were they 12-3 when they'd tried to slide, and they almost were able to put a really, really difficult task to the Lions. If they could have just got another a score or another penalty or two, and really built that lead and capitalised on the pressure they had. So they'll look at that and they'll take the positives from that. And they are also a country that needs a performance. It's not just a team now, it's a country that needs a lift. And South Africa, above all other countries, has this knack of producing something that lifts an entire nation.